Hello, everyone, and welcome to the AccuScience Labs podcast. We have a really special guest with us. It is Jody James. She is the VP of the Florida Cannabis Action Network. She's going to be talking to us today about the organization, what they do, and her thoughts on where we are with cannabis legalization. Jody, welcome to the podcast. And if you can, tell us a bit about the Florida Cannabis Action Network.
Well, you should have mentioned that I'm the new president, so I'm kind of feeling my way around the role. Florida Cannabis Action Network was founded in the late 1990s here in Florida, and it was founded to give rise to a growing number of people who wanted to do something. They were people who had been impacted by cannabis, and they were ready to try to change the laws. Because remember, in the mid-90s, you had some states that were changing laws out west, but there was nothing much happening on the Eastern Seaboard at the time. So Florida Cannabis Action Network became a network of friends who were working together. Over the years, became friends with the expert, and soon we became a network of experts. And so today's Florida Cannabis Action Network, of course, is very different than the Cannabis Action Network of the 1990s. Today, we focus mostly on consumer education, a lot of advocacy, a lot of personal education campaigns to make sure that the members of our network know the things that they need to know. It is a very, very dynamic organization. When we first started doing this, we became a C4 because no one wanted to put their name on this. And now we're struggling with items like, well, how do we give enough recognition to our donors? So it's a very different space that we find ourselves in. And I think that my role over the next 2 years as the newly elected president is to allow the amazing board of directors that we have to take their rightful place in impacting this issue. On our board of directors is a gentleman by the name of Mike Krawitz. Mike Krawitz has been working at the international level for more than 25 years. So he brings us firsthand what's happening at the WHO, firsthand what's happening at the United Nations. We have folks who work on our board who are lobbyists. They're on our advisory board. They keep us abreast of what's happening in Washington, D.C. And every year we take a group of folks just like you, and we bring them to Tallahassee, and we give them kind of an authentic lobby day experience, which means at the end of the day, you'll have been lost several times. The Capitol is a very confusing place. Your feet will hurt. You will feel like a rock star, and you'll realize how significant our work has been over the last 20 years, because this is really an issue that's percolating in Tallahassee. So our challenges right now are how do we make sure that all of our members feel heard and that all of our business members feel valued?
Now, I understand this is your second go around with the Florida Cannabis Action Network. What brought you back?
I don't know that I ever have gotten away from Florida Cannabis Action Network. And it's probably the issue that keeps me engaged and the people who keep me with Florida Cannabis Action Network. There is just not a group of people who have more integrity, that has a more consistent way of approaching this issue. And at the end of the day, I recognize that of all of the things that I could do in my world to make it a better place, I think solving cannabis policy is really the place where I can make the most difference. So you keep coming back because you can make a difference.
I watched a lot of your YouTube videos, and I see you're clearly passionate about this topic. What initially drew you into it?
You know, that's weird. Probably self-preservation. I used cannabis and I found that I didn't have to use the prescription drugs. So a very, very similar story. I had been injured on the job. I was actually told I would never work again and I would never have a pain-free day. So if I had stayed on the traditional Western medicine, they'd have been 100% correct. I would have remained over-medicated. The side effects from the medication that I took would have caused other side effects, and then I would have taken more medicines to mitigate more side effects. At the end of the day, like most people, I was probably dealing with anxiety. I was dealing with pain, and I was dealing with general, in addition to the injury that happened. By finding cannabis, and it was really finding cannabis, I was able to quietly get off of the other medicines. I was able to treat myself illegally, and I probably could have been like millions of people and done that. But I went to a festival in 1996 as a vendor. It was a cannabis festival, and I watched the organizers being arrested and drug off the stage. If you look back in the history, it's kind of one of the things that precipitated the creation of Cannabis Action Network, was the way that people were being treated in the mid-90s for simply trying to exercise their First Amendment. And so that's what got me started, is not in this America moment where I believed in the First Amendment and the ability of people to change the laws. But what keeps you coming back is the people that are touched by it, the personal stories. I've had the honor of working over 20 years with a woman who had Lou Gehrig's disease. Her name was Kathy Jordan. And so Kathy Jordan was diagnosed in 1986 with a rapidly deteriorating form of Lou Gehrig's disease. She found cannabis in Bradenton. She had come to Florida to save enough of her muscle relaxants to go back to Delaware and die with dignity. She tells the story that she felt her disease stop. Now, I don't know what that means, but I do know that over the last 25 years, now she's 70, over 70 now, and for the last 20 years, there were periods where I had to tell people, she is aging more gracefully than I am. She is wheelchair bound, but the cannabis treats her symptoms. One of the symptoms of Lou Gehrig's disease is salvaria, and one of the side effects of cannabis is dry mouth. One of the things that we know is that cannabis is a neuroprotectant, and ALS is a motor neuron disorder. So all of the things that have made cannabis amazing have been impacted every day in people's lives. And so it's hard to get away from feeling like you're doing something that really impacts people.
Speaking on that, you were prominent in shepherding the legislature introducing the 2013 Kathy Jordan Medical Cannabis Act. Can you tell us a bit about that bill and your involvement in it?
Well, you know, Florida Cannabis Action Network was actually there in 2011 when we introduced the first bill in the House of Representatives in Florida since 1978. So that was pretty monumental. And you talk about what has to happen. We had people from the Panhandle to Key West. We divided the state into 13 regions. We had regional folks who were doing public education campaigns in their area. And by the time we got the Kathy Jordan Medical Cannabis Bill introduced in the Florida House and Senate, we had really gotten the attention of some folks like Ben Pallera. There was a medical marijuana initiative that had been going around. And of course, there's three ways to change the law. The governor can, by fiat, say, we're just not going to make marijuana illegal anymore. And that would remove cannabis. He could, by fiat, remove cannabis from the Controlled Substance Act. The other way to change the law is through the legislature. And of course, the third way to change the law is through a constitutional amendment. And so really what we were trying to do was work with the 160 men and women in the Florida legislature to pass comprehensive reforms. And when you talk about what does the network have to do with that, well, you know, one of the things that is so vital to us is the input of those experts. So the Kathy Jordan Medical Cannabis Bill foresaw things like what a nightmare having a medical marijuana card being required might be. We saw some of the nightmares in the language in the constitutional amendment where they had to define whether or not we were using the term or, and we really meant or. So, you know, some of those things happen when you do a constitutional amendment. You're kind of stuck with what you put into the Constitution. And so we were working with the legislature, but it's been fabulous. And I think the best part, for me at least, has been the over 200 people that we've been able to bring up over the years, train them to give their testimony and speak their authentic truth in committee hearings. And that's just been really exciting. And that's what shepherding a bill means, is getting the right people in front of the right lawmakers.
How does it feel after you accomplish something like that? Is there a sense of relief, or does it feel like that's just one step in the process?
I don't know that there's ever been a sense of relief for me, because everything is a compromise. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're right, I'm passionate about this. I know that you and I both have an active endocannabinoid system. And that means that if for whatever reason you've had trauma and you're not getting the cannabinoids that you need, you're going to have problems in some other area. So trying to get enough cannabis, of the right kind of cannabis, to enough people fast enough is always my trepidation. And then there's the issue of being safe, because the reason we've done this all along, remember, I could have been treating myself illegally for 20 years. My friend Kathy Jordan certainly did not have to stand up and put a target on her back and say, I refuse to be treated like a criminal for using a plant that saved my life. So I wish it was relief. More often, it is a balancing act of who am I helping versus who am I harming. In 2014, when we passed the bill that licensed the first 5 dispensaries, that was a horrible, horrible compromise that we were only going to have 5 vertically licensed dispensing organizations. We sat with the president of the Senate and he said, if we don't accept this compromise, then the 500,000 children with seizure disorders will wait another year. Those are not things that give me relief. They're things that give me heartburn.
Florida has seen progress over the past decade. First legalizing CBD oil in 2014, expanding the medical program in 2016, then recently, obviously, the inclusion of smokable flower. There's still issues with THC caps, which have been problematic, but what do you think needs to be done to get adult use legalization?
So, you know, that is certainly the million-dollar question. If I had a pocketbook that was unlimited, I would go to the federal government. The problem with that approach is that it is absolutely gridlock in Washington, D.C. Florida Cannabis Action Network has been working with Commissioner Nikki Fried in the guns rights lawsuit. Because, you know, when we talk about all of the progress that we've made, now you have to talk about kind of where the rubber meets the road. And that is, are we protecting the people who now have access? So protection might mean being able to exercise both your Second Amendment right to carry a gun and your right to maintain a medical marijuana card, which is certainly the reason that Commissioner Fried filed the lawsuit against the Biden administration, is to clarify those kinds of things. I have a constitutional right to medical cannabis, provided that I go through the proper steps. And yet, I have no employee protection. We talked about the 2014 CBD laws and the subsequent removal of CBD and cannabis hemp from the Controlled Substance Act federally and internationally. That was part of the work that our board member, Mike Krautz, was part of making that happen with the WHO. While that's hugely important, if the product that you get off of the shelf that you believe as a consumer to be all that it says it is, and then you fail a drug test, you still lose your job. We cannot assure that if you are in a child custody battle and you have a medical cannabis card, that won't be used against you. So in terms of what do we think needs to happen to get adult use done, we certainly need more people to get engaged with Florida Cannabis Action Network. Get on our mailing list, flcan.org, O-R-G, flcan.org. You can sign up to get a subscriber. We're going to send out an action alert and we're going to say, hey, we need you to take action. I know that you work a lot with AccuScience, and I'm a firm believer in the power of third-party testing. One of the campaigns that Florida Cannabis Action Network did that did not get me any support from our lawmakers was the 2 P's that don't belong in patient care. And that is the word paraphernalia, which is what they wanted to call our medical delivery devices, because you always go and get a syringe for your grandma's diabetes and we call it paraphernalia. No, your nebulizer is not paraphernalia. It's a medical delivery device. But they wanted to write paraphernalia in the law. The other thing they wanted to allow in the law was pesticides. And so we thought that 2 things that did not belong in patient care. So we generated almost 700 letters to the 6 committee members in less than 24 hours, because somebody cared about keeping pesticide out of their medicine. When we have the kind of constituency that is ready to agitate about this again, we'll take it to the next step.
It's interesting that you bring that up because we had Commissioner Fried on our podcast recently. She talked about the stigma and that there's a bit of reefer madness still going on. There seems to be a bit of a challenge convincing people of the medical benefits of the plant, which seems interesting considering all the information available out there. Why do you think it's still a challenge?
Well, I think that certainly, is there a right answer? For me, it's a couple things. First of all, you don't know about the endocannabinoid system, and your doctor doesn't know about the endocannabinoid system. And that is something that is changing, but not rapidly enough. Before I realized that we had an endocannabinoid system and that it was a governor, to me, it sounded like snake oil. I was all about not arresting someone for marijuana, but you couldn't convince me that marijuana was good for my sore toe, and it was good for my asthma, and it was good for my Parkinson's, and it was good. You just couldn't convince me about that. Now, when I started to learn from people like Dr. Mashulam about the advantage of the endocannabinoid system, from Dr. Ethan Russo about the interaction of the synapses and what was happening in the body with whole plant cannabinoid and the different parts and pieces that are in the plant, then the medicine started to make sense. But now we are to the point where we have a million products on the market and most of them don't work. And so if we didn't have a PR problem before, we're going to have a PR problem now. So, you know, product integrity, that's one of the ways that we're going to overcome the stigma. Certainly, as long as there is a federal prohibition on cannabis, that stigma is real. I can't get a federal job. We have an amazingly, beautifully talented woman on our board of directors, Dana Niffen. She is a licensed art therapist. She cannot get a job where they are federally funded and have a medical marijuana card. Now, will the feds actually take away their funding? Probably not. But as long as someone has that fear, then that's going to continue to be amplified right down the line, and it's going to continue that stigma. You know, Gandhi said to the Indians when they were talking about breaking free from English rule, the English think that we're dirty and that they think that we're lazy and they think we can't take care of ourselves. If we want to break away from English rule, we have to take care of ourselves and we have to not be dirty and, you know, we have to not be those things. So certainly part of it is not being a stereotypical stoner. Part of it is telling the truth. If you do use cannabis, come out of the proverbial closet. And part of it is police the people who are creating cannabis products so that the people that you know that are now beginning to use cannabis products are using products that are quality. And that's another thing that you get from the Florida Cannabis Action Network, is we know that the people who are producing products in the Cannabis Action Network understand the laws. They're producing products that are safe for human consumption, that have been tested on their friends and their animals, and that they're going to get what they pay for.
I do think from a marketing perspective, organizations like yours putting out great informative content and having people like yourself who are extremely knowledgeable on the topic has to help further the view, right?
We certainly believe that good education is going to be the keystone to all of this. I think that, you know, where the rubber meets the road is personal protection. I want to know that if I do try this product, that the product that I get is going to be safe, that it's going to be properly labeled, and that the end result is I'm not going to lose my job or my kids or my mind, you know, little things like that. But more and more people are trying cannabis products in 38 states. Have, you know, really embraced medical marijuana, 19, maybe 20 states. I don't remember what New Jersey made. But, you know, we just had another state that set forth what their legalization platform is going to look like. This doesn't last forever. But we certainly need to, those of us who love cannabis or have had our lives affected by cannabis, we need to, at this point, give back a little bit. And that means telling the truth and getting out there and talking about the value of this plant in such a way that our neighbors understand.
What you mentioned about the testing and consumers knowing what they're getting is obviously key. And as a testing lab, there's obviously agreement on this end. In your opinion, why is it important for labs like AccuScience to continue to thrive in Florida?
Well, you know, there is no market without a safe, regulated market. When people talk about marijuana and medicine, what they need when they need medicine is something that is pure, precise, and predictable. Organizations like AccuScience make sure that that's the case. We don't move forward into a product line that can be covered by your insurance, that can be given to your great grandma on her deathbed, that can be given to the pregnant lady in the womb. We don't do that until we have products that have stability over time testing. I really am a huge third-party testing advocate. I do not believe that you can trust business to always do the right thing. I think you can trust business to always do the right thing for their shareholders. And I think that we need, I don't want to call it watchdogs, but certainly partners like AccuScience to make sure that as we move forward, that the products are exactly what they say they are. We have a campaign as Florida Cannabis Action Network. It's kind of our safety first, prepare to have a good time. If you don't know what the proper dose is on a cannabis product, if you're not confident what's in that product, probably you shouldn't take it. You know, we are reminding people things like don't take candy from strangers. You know, there's a lot of people out there. And, you know, if you just picked up a CBD product or a cannabis product at a festival and it says, wow, or it is looks like it's a Twinkie and it says Twinkies, it's probably not a vendor that you want to continue to purchase things from. You know, these guys are not following the rules. Third-party testing and the ability to track their tests, which is the part that the Department of Health has recently put into place, that third-party testing that then goes seed to sale. At the end of the day, that's what allows us to build consumer confidence. And when consumers have enough confidence in this product every day, the laws change. And then we have use for everyone, not just use for adults.
Well, that's interesting. What's the next steps for you and the Florida Cannabis Action Network? What's next on the docket?
Well, you know, it's funny because there were a time where kind of an old organization where all of our projects were new and had never been done before. There's nothing new under the sun for Cannabis Action Network. We're headed to the statewide AFL-CIO convention this weekend. The AFL-CIO, there will be about 500 union leaders there that represent a million working families in Florida. And we think that a million working families in Florida need to know about our Safety First campaign because they're driving past signs that say CBD sold here. You can walk into a gas station and you can get a product that will get you high on cannabinoids, Delta 8 or Delta 10 or Delta 0 or Delta Z. They're all coming up. So we feel like the educating a million working families on how to keep their families safe is a good use of our network resources. And of course, it is June 21st, and that means we have a whole new cadre of qualified candidates for Florida House and Senate. So we've got our flcan.org/wevote campaign coming up. So our legislative committee is meeting right now. We've got a series of questions that we're going to be asking all of the candidates for the 160 House and Senate offices. That's the Florida House and Senate. We'll ask them a series of questions. We'll rate them on how they are on this issue. And then we'll get out a candidate's guide in front of the primary in August. And then again, a candidate's guide before the general election in November. Because if you care about this issue and you don't know how the person you're voting for really feels about this issue, we can spend a lot more time getting nothing accomplished with the legislature. And that is the enemy of moving forward. And that's the enemy of getting safe legal access to more people. So who we vote for matters, and we're going to make sure that people know how the person they are choosing feels about this issue.
I love the organization and what you're doing there, Jody. I also love a key word in your organization name, action. We know there are a lot of silent followers of the movement, but unless you're willing to take action, it's probably going to be difficult to see real change, right?
Well, you know, and that's true. There are so many ways to take cannabis with you. I mean, there really are. And at one point, you know, we've gone through this whole stage. If you think it's hard to talk about cannabis now, work with us 17 years ago when, you know, when you put up a pot leaf at an event, you were guaranteed to have an escort of nine law. You would immediately have an armed escort. As soon as you put up a pot flag, you had an armed escort. So a lot of the early work we did really was on the First Amendment, being able to exercise your right to talk about this. So that's the first thing that everyone should do with this, is if you have a personal experience with cannabis, don't let any ignorance go unanswered. And that was really our theme for a couple of years. Just don't let an ignorance go unanswered. If you are back at the water cooler and you hear somebody say something false about cannabis, correct their conception, their misconception. You know, letters to the editor used to be a prime way that we communicated our ideas. And we would have groups of friends. We were all friends in the community. And we would see one bad, stupid article about cannabis, and I would write a letter to the editor. And then Susie would write a letter about my letter to the editor. And then John would write something about the original article. And pretty soon, if at the time, a letter to the editor was worth about $5,000 in advertising space. So where's the new marketplace? Are you on a blog? Do you get on news sites? Do you tweet? And are you making sure that you are checking your source? I watched a group that has plenty of fans get out there and give absolutely false information about cannabis and guns. It was absolutely false information. We've got to correct those things. I went ahead and, you know, did that Facebook thing. And we all know you can get a lot of trouble correcting someone on Facebook. So I texted a couple of my friends and I said, I'm going in the deep end. Make sure you got my back. But we have to correct those ignorances. As people begin to understand what this plant can do for them, it is important that we make sure that we are maintaining the public confidence. And that's what's going to take us to the next level. Adult use, what that looks like, I hope it is always preferenced by the word responsible. Responsible adult use.
Well, we appreciate the work that you're doing there, Jody. Organizations like AccuScience don't continue to thrive without the work you're doing there.
There's always something to do. Your audience can't see what a big smile I have with your kind words. Thank you very much for having us today. Florida Cannabis Action Network is a big tent. We welcome lots of people. We have a business level. We have a sustaining member level. You can start your membership with just as little as $5 a month. You can be as active as you need to be, or you can sit back and support other people who are being active. Thanks for your time today.
Concludes our episode of the AccuScience podcast for today. To follow the Florida Cannabis Action Network and the great work that Jody is doing there with the organization, you can head to flcan.org. Again, that is flcan.org. For more information on AccuScience Labs, you can check us out on the web at AccuScienceLabs.com. Again, AccuScienceLabs.com.